This is the PBT Podcast, the most comprehensive and entertaining 30 minutes on the NBA anywhere. From insights to interviews, we've got you covered. Here are your hosts, Pro Basketball Talk's Kurt Helin and Eitan Shander.
We welcome you back into another edition of the PBT Podcast alongside Kurt Helin, Eitan Shander. The NBA Finals have come and gone rather quickly, we may add. So all the attention right now is the NBA Draft will be next week. The offseason, what happens with LeBron, what happens with Carmelo Anthony, and of course Kevin Love. Before we even get to that, though, as quick and as fast as the NBA Finals was, it's, you know, one of those blink and you miss it towns right on the map. You better maximize as much as you can get from this, because the Spurs did what I don't think a lot of people thought, and myself included, Kurt. They came in, they don't not only beat the Miami Heat, they dismantled them.
Yeah, I think that was the surprising part. I had picked the Spurs, but I thought it would go seven games. I didn't think it was going to be so much LeBron against the world. I mean, it was not a good team performance at all from Miami, which is kind of why they're in the free agent. You know, there's a lot more questions about their free agency right now. On top of that, I don't know the last time we saw a team execute that well in the finals. I mean, as much as you don't win the finals without obviously having a pretty impressive level of execution, you've got to go back a long, long time to think of a team that was playing as well as that Spurs team.
It was a perfect storm for really. You had the Spurs, as you mentioned. Every little thing they did, it was like they did it to a T. They did it to a perfection. At the same time, Dwayne Wade aged at least 10 years in a span of the Eastern Conference Finals stopped to when the NBA Finals started. Bosh, again, a lot of questions there. It just seemed like this was the wrong time, right, for the Miami Heat to just have a little issue, let alone the big ones that they had, because what the Spurs, I'm right there with you, man, marveling at how they played the game in the finals against, of all teams, the Heat.
Yeah, and at both ends of the floor. I mean, we often talk about how beautiful, you know, we were calling it the beautiful game on offense. The way they were moving the ball, it would have made Coach Norman Dale proud, like right out of Hoosiers. He would have loved it. Everybody was touching the ball. Everybody's sharing it. It was just a thing of beauty. It was really a joy to watch and to get to see in person the way that whole thing unfolds. But I still, and it sounds weird, but I'll stick with this. Peak Miami Heat could beat that Spurs team. The problem was, and I think Game 5 was a perfect example, they can't sustain it. They didn't have to over the course of the season. Their short bench and the aging Wade and all that, they could get by playing a quarter or a half of defense and a great LeBron James game, and that was enough against everybody in the East, and it would have been fourth or fifth best in the West, frankly. They race out to that lead. They are able to put pressure on you. They're able to make these runs. They're able to put together stretches of play. And they used to be able to put together that stretch of play, and then their average play the rest of the game was good enough. It wasn't here. Yeah. They put together that run, and you're like, uh-oh, maybe I should start, you know, making sure I've got my flight to Miami booked for game 6. And then, boom, they just start picking them apart. And then they go on that, what it was, I think it was 59-22 run or whatever it ended up being. They were absolutely relentless with their execution, and Miami just couldn't match that.
I wonder, and not even this year so much as maybe the last 3 years, ever since the loss to the Mavericks, and they come back, they win two straight, and then you add how easy it was against just a brutal, beat-up East at times. They get to the postseason, they cruise through it. We saw what they did to the Pacers. I wonder how much there was this stargazing. There was, you know what, Wade thinking, I don't need to play 150% for the 30, 35 minutes I'm out there, because I've seen it already. I've seen LeBron take over a game. You know, maybe Bosh is thinking the same thing. And granted, they may not want to go that way, but the body tells you what your mind can at times. I wonder, Kurt, how much of the stargazing played into the fact where they were just so overconfident, knowing, hey, no matter what, LeBron's going to pull us out of this. We saw it in the past.
Yeah, they weren't hungry. I mean, they certainly weren't, because they, like you said, they've been pulled out of this in the past. And I think that, like I said, that's just part of it. They hadn't had to pull this off. A lot of other things went wrong. I mean, Birdman was injured. I mean, he'd had a little slump before that, but the injury certainly didn't help. He just wasn't moving the same. Mario Chalmers, it'll eventually come out what's going on, but there's some stuff going on, but he obviously had come way back to Earth and fallen apart. It's just kind of been a situation, and with everything that went on, it was just a snowball, and it was at the, like you said, the perfect storm of the wrong time, because the Spurs were playing absolutely fantastic basketball, and it was going to take a whole lot of perfect Heat basketball to beat them. And they, like I said, they couldn't sustain it.
No.
And they were getting steamrolled.
Not at all. You're right. You couldn't believe, okay, game three, it's back in Miami. You know, it's Miami right now.
Everybody thought Miami was taking that game.
And then game four. Oh, I don't know. What was more surprising to you? That just everybody, as you mentioned, you just said it, and that captured, I think, the nation right there, which is, okay, come on, guys. Miami game three. So it's not even a must win. It's just a foregone conclusion. They're going to win it. Now game four. Okay, clearly you have to bounce back and show us something after you got beat up in game three. I don't know what was more shocking. I really don't.
I don't either. And it was, you know, they'd won game two behind a phenomenal LeBron James performance. But as the Spurs adjusted and started taking everything else away, even, you know, Kawhi Leonard did a fantastic job on LeBron, but LeBron was still the single best player in that series. And Kawhi was probably, you know, Kawhi wins the MVP, but LeBron put up fantastic numbers. He was great at both ends of the floor. He shut down Tony. Look, what did he do in game? He had, 31 points in game five and largely shut down Tony Parker for much of that game. It wasn't enough. When you talk to the Heat players about what was so difficult about the Spurs and stopping them, Ray Allen's words were, all five guys are live, and basically there's nobody else like that. Everybody else is much more ahead of the snake team. If we stop this guy, everything else starts to fall apart. They're not that way. All five guys are live. All five guys can score, and you've got to defend two guys every possession.
It's amazing to watch it. I don't know how easy, and clearly it's not because everybody would be doing this. I don't know how easy it is to duplicate, even for the Spurs next year, so much talent in Tony Parker and even what we get now, right, from Tim Duncan and Manu, the minutes, the management of his minutes this year. It clearly worked at the end as opposed to a Dwayne Wade where he missed time as opposed to playing in a lot more games and just having limited minutes. But those three guys, as special as they are, it's almost like, they're part of it. They're the groundwork of it, but you can build off it where, you know, it's like, okay, you can't just run that system anywhere.
No, it's you know, I wrote a whole post about this where they talked about the Spurs, about how it really took them a couple years to figure this out and to build up the trust and to build up everything. Because, I mean, look, this is still a league where you get paid based on your numbers, and you're asking guys to give up numbers, give up minutes, give up points, and make that extra pass. You're asking guys to sacrifice something they're not used to sacrificing, and it's not every guy who can play this. You know, I mean, look, you can't put J.R. Smith in that system.
No,
you can't put, and he's the easy example, but virtually everybody who comes out of an AAU system where it's, hey, get this guy the ball and get out of the way, it just doesn't flow that way. And it's, you know, that works great at AAU, but it doesn't really prepare people for that kind of basketball. So it was a beautiful thing to watch. It also exposed every flaw with the Heat and why they've really got to make some considerations about what's next.
And speaking of sacrifice, that's a perfect segue right here. And it's the PBT podcast. Danny Green, I had a chance to talk to now world champion Danny Green. So we'll hear from Danny at the end of the podcast. Before we get to that, though, as far as sacrifice and as far as, you know, taking less, in this case, it's less money. And clearly the Miami Heat, what LeBron James does, that's on everybody's mind first and foremost with this NBA offseason. On the surface, you're asking these three guys to take less money. It's difficult, but at the same time, if they all take what they're owed the next 2 years, how difficult is it going? I mean, they're basically paralyzed.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there are four guys, assuming, and Birdman's going to opt out. Haslam hasn't made an announcement yet, but assuming that he opts out, even if it's just Norris Cole and the three big three, they're at the salary cap. They've got to fill out the rest of the roster with mid-level exception and some other guys. They just don't have anything left. I mean, the minimum guys, they can re-sign their own guys. It's not very good. And so the only way they really make additions is for everybody to take a pay cut. And it's going to be interesting because LeBron might take a little. I mean, he earns a ton of money off the court. Is Chris Bosh going to do that? Is he willing to do that? He might. He likes it there. But how much? And the other question, to me, the biggest one is Wade.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to sell Wade on I think honestly what you have to sell him on is more money over more years. And it's one of these contracts that you're giving a guy. It's sort of like the Kobe contract. Like, we're paying you more than we should here right here because we need this in the short term and we want to reward you long term for everything you've done for the franchise, you know, since you were drafted here.
The Kobe deal.
Well, the Kobe deal is that way, but I think what you want to do with Wade, because he's not going to – look, you can't get him to opt out of $41 million guaranteed over the next 2 years and take less. But what you can do is say, hey, we'll give you 4 years, $12 million a year. You know you're going to get bit on the back end of that, but you would free up a lot of cash right now that you could go use to get quality players, because you've got to get ideally some help at the point guard. You've got to get some depth up front. You've got to get in some more athleticism. And those guys, as much as they would love to come and challenge for a championship and play with LeBron and live in Miami, they're not going to do it for that much less money.
No, and that's the difficulty, right, to maintain Miami as the destination, as a landing spot. So that's interesting, the idea that you say you defer it. But
yeah, essentially.
Right, so you're just deferring debt. And ultimately, how many more years you think, honestly, that LeBron, with all the wear and tear, he's got, what, 3.5 maybe, where he is by
– Yeah, but he's such a – he's such a physical oddity that it could be longer.
Could be longer?
I mean, he's turning 30. I suppose you'd say 33, 34, he's going to start to decline a little, but he's still going to be a pretty big beast for the next at least 4 seasons, I would think, barring any injuries or anything like that, obviously.
Right.
So I think, you know, if you can get them all to come back for that, you can – you know, if you can just do this once to get some assets in there, you can start to move some stuff around. And you don't even have to go – you know, look, can you – can you get guys like, oh, Sean Marion? I don't know that he's eager to leave Dallas and they don't want him to go, but he'd have to be intrigued to go chase a ring. If Chicago amnesties Carlos Boozer, wouldn't you challenge you go? I mean, that's a guy they could use. I mean, there's some guys they're going to be able to get affordably, and if they can go get look, if you talk about guys from the Spurs, Patty Mills is a free agent. He'd be better point guard than anybody they got on that roster right now. So
Kyle Lowry's a name that's been that would take a pay. Now that's the idea, right?
That's a steep pay cut, and it's kind of like the Melo thing. Suddenly Melo, you got to leave a lot of money on the table. Lowry isn't quite Melo money, but it's getting up there. So you're going to have to – that would be a great – I mean, I think that would be a fantastic fit, but you're leaving a lot of money on the table, and I don't know if you can do that or if you're better off getting 3 guys at $5 million rather than paying, you know, $12 million to one guy. You know, you can do it in smaller chunks and get some depth. So they've got some options, but they've got – I think Pat Riley can do a lot. He is still Pat Riley, and I think that there's a lot of people who want to come to Miami, but if he doesn't have the financial flexibility, it's kind of moot.
And granted, as big of a decision and question mark is with Wade because of the just debilitation that you see on the body and the knees, I'm thinking Chris Bosh may be at least as difficult to convince. This is – we talk about Melo, right? Last big deal. Bosh could go out there in the open market, command max money. Instead, you're asking him, as he already took a pay cut and has already depreciated his value, I think, on the court, because we don't see him that 2010-plus guy in Toronto anymore. He could theoretically say, okay, you know what? My value as a player may continue to drop. I'm going to take advantage of this right now, go to fill-in-the-blank team that's going to give him max money and kind of ride out there and get paid since he's already won. I know you mentioned that he likes it down in South Beach. I wonder how much that plays into his decision making.
I think, look, he more than the other two, when talking after the last game, LeBron wouldn't discuss it. Wade wouldn't really discuss it. He was the one guy, both after the game and then in exits, who was more eager to stay, it sounded like. It's like he would be willing to make the move. I think that he has come to a comfort level with where he was. I mean, he was a 20-10 guy. He was putting up numbers, and he wasn't getting the recognition. Now he still gets slammed a lot as a member of the Heat here, But I think he's come to grips with that and accepted his role and adjusted his game. And I just think he's happy and comfortable and isn't looking to move. But like you said, if this thing starts to break apart, he also knows he can get paid somewhere.
Exactly right. All right, speaking of getting paid, Carmelo Anthony, and I think the big decision clearly is whether or not he stays with the Knicks, goes out there and tests the water. And then, of course, where could he go? Chicago, I think, is where everybody points to initially. Very difficult for me to think that the Miami Heat are going to take such a significant pay cut. And then on top of that, Melo is going to take a pay cut. So all four of those guys can get together in Miami. So what does it come down to right now? Basically, does he stay with the Knicks or does he go to the Bulls?
I think, yeah. I mean, there are going to be other options. Dallas will come in there. Houston will come in
right
there. Yeah. The problem is twofold, I think, with Houston. With threefold, really. A, they've got a lot of work to do to make that kind of offer. They've got to find a way to get rid of Jeremy Lin and Omar Asik for nothing. They've got to basically give them away and take no salary back. You might not be able to keep Chandler Parsons out of this. You probably lose Jones. That's a lot of the depth that makes them interesting right now goes away. But you, let's say he does it and they get their big three. There's one flaw with this, and that's that Harden is awful on defense. And Melo is improved the last couple years, and that makes him below average. There is way too much mess. As great a defensive center as Dwight Howard is, that's a whole lot of mess you're asking him to clean up on a nightly basis. And I just, the other part of that is you're asking him to do it. And this is why I don't think he comes to Houston. Why would you go to the West?
No, it makes no sense.
Why would you go to a conference where even if you're good, even if you put together this good team, and you guys get all the pieces, you've still got to fight through Oklahoma City, the Spurs, and the Clippers, who are all very good already and probably going to be a little better next year. Well, the Spurs, I don't know if they can be much better, but I mean, you're going to have three really good teams, and that's not counting Golden State on the rise and Portland playing. I mean, it's brutal out West. I mean, Memphis is out there. You know, all these teams that are just going to – there's no easy exit from the West. I don't know – if you're choosing between the East and the West and things are relatively even, I don't see why you do that.
No, if you go to Chicago, let's say, and you're Carmelo Anthony, you've basically assured yourself to, if not the Eastern Conference Finals, the round right before that, it's pretty much a lock that you're going to get there. So you've made it that much easier for yourself. Clearly, if all things are – even if you can get more money, even if, let's say, the Houston Rockets have found a way to pay you more money, I'm still looking at the East just for that. Isn't this move for Melo about winning? And isn't this move about, you know, hey, getting a championship and past all the money? If that's really the case, then make it as easy as humanly possible. Stay in the East.
Exactly. Look, if he's leaving, then he's – committed to, he has to be committed to winning, because if it's money, he's obviously staying in New York. There's also the ego factor, and I always thought this was the tougher part for him. He's the man in New York. They're building a team around him. He is the face of the Knicks.
Yes.
That not everybody's willing to give that up. If he is genuinely willing to give that up to win and accept that, you know, this is still kind of Derrick Rose's and Joakim Noah's team if you go to Chicago, or it's, you know, you've got to share the limelight in Houston. If you're willing to do that and take less money, then you're already willing to make that sacrifice. Then exactly, you make it as easy on yourself as possible to reach your goal.
I can
climb the little hill next to me, or I can go find Everest. You know, I'll take the little hill. Thanks.
Please. My goodness. Just make it easy on yourself. Now, there is this situation, too, with Kevin Love that we'll get to. And again, Danny Green, we had a chance to talk to Danny Green, so he'll join us on the PBT podcast in a minute. But before that, Kevin Love is the third tier here in this NBA offseason. And it looks like, for the most part, and granted, I think Boston, obviously, if they upgrade with Love and Rondo, that makes them, again, in this week, East, automatically in the postseason discussion. But it doesn't seem like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like there are a lot, if not any, real contenders that are trying to make room for Love right now.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I've heard Chicago would be interested if they can't land Melo. But the problem there becomes to get Carmelo, you know, you've got an amnesty Boozer. Can you get him to take enough less that you get to keep Gibson somehow? You're probably going to have to jettison somebody like, or certainly Dunleavy, and consider jettisoning, you know, maybe Butler, as hard as it would be to give him up. You know, you've got to figure out some stuff. If you trade for him, though, I mean, you're going to have to put Boozer in the deal to balance out the salaries. And then, look, I'm asking for Taj Gibson.
Yeah.
I'm not taking Dunleavy and Butler. You're going to have to give me something of real quality back. You're going to have to give me your picks, and you're going to have to give me Taj Gibson. The question I keep coming back to is this. Is what does Minnesota really want? And I'm not sure. I mean, that seems to have changed in the last 24 hours. There was a lot of talk that what they wanted was to rebuild. They wanted some young players and picks. And now, look, we want an established player. We want somebody who's younger but good, not just – you can't just throw us picks. I think a lot of that, you know, you're hearing about Kenneth Faried, and Denver's suddenly in the mix with Kenneth Faried and Wilson Chandler and some pick, you know, they've got the 11 pick and they're trying to get Aaron Aflalo to make part of a deal. That's a really interesting combo, you know, to put with Ricky Rubio. But the guy I really think what this is ultimately leverage for is they're trying to leverage Golden State into giving up Klay Thompson as part of a deal. David Lee, because you got to balance the salaries, Klay Thompson and a pick type of thing.
That's a lot. It just seems like a lot for a guy in Love. And I granted, you know, the numbers are there, and he'll fill a stat sheet every single night. I do know that there are some concerns, right? Okay, not being in the postseason at all, and yeah. At what point do you look at it and say, yes, you have at times no help around you, but you are the star. It just seems like that's a lot to give up for Kevin Love.
It's a lot. Although I'd probably do it. I think you can replicate as much as I like Klay Thompson, and I'm a big Klay Thompson fan. He's an outside shooter. Like, you can replicate or come, you know, get pretty close to replicating that skill set much more easily than you can Love's. Love and Steph Curry suddenly instantly formed the best pick and pop combo in the league. It would be ridiculously hard to stop them. And as you throw stuff at them, they both move the ball. Other guys are going to get open. I think their offense, especially under Steve Kerr, who's promising more motion and cutting and not as much stagnant stuff as they did, they could have an absolutely wicked offense. They've still got to get Andrew Bogut healthy and keep him healthy for defensive reasons. And they've got to get, you know, they'll have Iguodala still.
Right.
Kind of forget about him. But, I mean, there's a lot of nice pieces there. To me, they move into that upper echelon of the West. And I'd probably be willing to do that. But you're right. The price is steep.
Well, see, this guy could get moved on draft night.
I got a feeling that they're going to look at it. If they really just want – if picks are what they're interested in and good young players, Boston has a great offer. If they really want more established players, then other teams have other, you know, interesting stuff. If you want more established player, then even if – I don't know why Denver's out there, because he hasn't said anything about re-signing in Denver. It doesn't make sense for me. Why would you give – I mean, except for the fact that – they've been looking to move Kenneth Faried, but maybe they're trying to move Love to move him again. I don't know, but it's weird to suddenly have him in there when that's not a team that's fought to get him. We'll see. Minnesota, I think, is going to sit around and decide on the night before the draft if they've gotten an offer, or the day of the draft, frankly, if they've gotten an offer that they don't think is going to get a whole lot better and can speed their rebuilding along, and then they'll pull the trigger.
And flip we trust, right? That's what Wolves fans are thinking right now. All right, so we'll keep an eye on that to see. It looks like we can definitely expect some Love movement definitely before the start of the season. Melo, yeah. And LeBron, too, in this offseason. It's just getting started, man. A lot of things happening. Quickly, as we recap and look back one more time at the NBA Finals, I had a chance to talk to Danny Green, now world champion San Antonio Spurs. Here's our chat. Danny, thanks for the time, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show, man.
Oh, listen, it's our pleasure, and we appreciate the time. Are you still in victory lap mode?
Yes, kind of, sort of, yes. We're still having fun, enjoying, you know, last couple of days have been, you know, really fun, but it hasn't set in yet.
I'm sure, man, especially as the summer goes on. And we've all heard how much you guys had the heat on your minds and how important it was to get back to the finals and win it, but also to kind of correct what happened last year. Was it about really getting to Miami, or was it about correcting your own mistakes?
Both. It was more so our own mistakes than anything else. I mean, Miami was just, you know, the cherry on top. We wasn't sure or expecting to get them, but we wanted to make sure that ourselves were prepared and, you know, I guess better than last year, fixing the mistakes that we, you know, had, and they had to be more perfect in order to win. You know, we were a couple minutes away from, you know, winning last year. So, you know, in order to get that done, we had to, you know, fix a little, you know, mental mistakes more than anything. It wasn't, you know, more so, you know, us being, you know, doing this or doing that. It was more so just, you know, fatigue and mentally being locked in for 48 minutes. And that's the biggest key for us.
I can't imagine what it felt like last year, that defeat you guys went through. I'm sure everybody, it just affected everybody immensely right away. But as the off season began and as you guys began to get back to work, who do you think that it impacted the most? Who do you think that that loss drove the most this year?
I think Manu, out of everybody. And you can tell just in his emotions throughout the whole year and how he played in the playoffs, he's very emotional. Even after, you know, today we got a chance to talk about his exit meetings, and, you know, he told everybody after last year how depressed and devastated he was, and Timmy was too. But, you know, he came back so much stronger and healthier this year and more focused than anybody, and he was a big key, you know, a big lift for us, you know, throughout the whole playoffs on this, you know, this series.
World champion Danny Green, our guest. How about that reaction you had to Manu posterizing Bosch?
Oh, man, it was exciting. You know, it was good to see him play well and make big plays. That dunk, and then the next, you know, time down, he had a three-pointer. It was a very big place for us, you know, to pick us up. And, you know, I couldn't be happy for anybody else. You know, I guess Manu was the guy. If anybody could get it done, it was Manu. Because last year he was so devastated, and they ragged on him so much for turning the ball over. And kind of they said he was losing the game for us. And he blamed himself a lot for it. But, you know, for him to pick us up and be able to be a big piece of us winning, you know, was great to watch.
You ever think that he still had that in him, though? I mean, he got up on that.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I told people I had to, you know, check twice, do a double take, make sure I saw the right guy. I didn't know it was Manu. But, you know, it shocked me. It shocked me. It shocked everybody. But I think it was such a momentum swinger for us. It got us going, the fans, the crowd. And once we got back in the game, you know, Miami, they couldn't bounce back from it. We got our momentum going so well that, you know, they kind of got fatigued and tired out. But they jumped on us early. But so once Manu did those, you know, couple plays, he really picked it up for us.
Danny, was there a moment in this series, maybe game three in Miami or four for that matter, or you guys knew, okay, we just own this team?
There was not any moment that we thought we owned them. You know, they're two-time defending champs. There was a moment where we thought we were in good position. There was a couple times. You know, such at the game three, we thought we were in pretty good position. At the same time, we weren't satisfied. We knew we had a goal. You know, our short-term goal was, you know, to win two in Miami, but also on game four to win the third quarter. So we wanted to win the third quarter, not be satisfied with the game three win, and win game four as well. If we won that game, we were in, you know, good position coming home.
I'm sure it was on your mind, so forgive me if it's too obvious, but last year's finals, the loss, especially to Miami, you're back now taking on the Heat. How much does that, the emotions, what you went through last year, not wanting to go through it again, how much does that play into you personally and the team throughout this finals?
I played a big part, I think, in everybody, especially since we had the same group from last year with the, you know, addition of two others maybe. Everybody last year remembered it and had a bad taste in their mouth, and we've been working all season for this, you know, opportunity to get back to the finals and play them again. And the fact that we got them again, you know, I think it made it that much more emotional. So, you know, guys remember that. They took it, you know, to heart, took it very personally, and they wanted to make sure that they didn't, you know, have any plays where they regretted or, you know, didn't, you know, after the game, have any regrets not leaving it all out on the floor. So, we, you know, we did that, and we came out as a group, and everybody played really hard.
Danny Green, our guest. I'm sure this year's Spurs team, you mentioned that last year the chemical makeup didn't change much, but you guys win it this year against the Miami Heat, who you lose last year. But I'm sure this team, more so than maybe any other team you've played in, it just has such a unique quality to it. What do you think the biggest difference is?
From this year to last year?
Just this year's team in general, compare it to last year or maybe any other team that you played on.
They're very similar to the teams we've had here in the past, but I think we were just a deeper team this year. We had great guys come off the bench with a lot of energy. I think the biggest difference maker was, you know, Patty and Manu coming off healthy, and obviously Boris being more aggressive this year. Thiago had some great, you know, moments for us this year, and he obviously started, came off the bench, but Marco was very consistent for us all season with the minutes that he got, or, you know, lack thereof. He came in and made plays for us. He knocked down shots, but our bench is a lot deeper when you're able to bring in those guys, those type of shooters, and a healthy Manu coming off the bench.
Danny, you have a great story personally, one of redemption and what you've been able to do with this opportunity back with San Antonio. And last year, I think we were all as fans watching and right on the verge of it, but the team itself, you guys come up short. This year, you win it from a personal standpoint, from what you've gone through. How rewarding is it to win a championship?
Very rewarding. It's a big relief, a big, it's hard to put into words, but guys are able to relax now, take a deep breath. But it's a big relief to win, to be the last team standing. Like I said, it really hasn't set in much for me. I'm sure it'll hit me later on, but I'm trying to enjoy as much as possible right now. Enjoy my teammates, enjoy my family. But to be the last team standing, it's a great accomplishment, and how we did it is even more admirable. And being on the sideline, I didn't play as well as I wanted to in game five, but just watching the game and seeing how guys are playing together and how emotionally motivated everybody was, it was great to watch and then be a part of.
How about your head coach? How much has Greg Popovich's trust in you been key to your own success?
He's been a big piece. He's been pushing me all year. Obviously he's been pretty tough on me, but I know it's for the best. And it was a great ride. It was a lot of ups and downs, but he pushed us all, and I think he does a great job of getting the best out of us. And I honestly think he was the finals MVP, or the MVP for the whole playoffs, because he's the reason why we got over the hump of being OKC, and the reason why after game two loss, we came back so much more focused and motivated, and came out and won game three big, and also game four. So he was great, and he's the biggest factor in why we were so successful.
Yeah, and I mean this really as a compliment here, the utmost respect. We get nothing from you guys. I mean, you guys define focus. You don't give the media anything. And clearly, it's a culture that everybody is buying into. Who's the biggest front as far as the stone face in the media that won't give us a damn thing, but behind closed doors is the complete opposite?
Probably Pop. probably Pop. But there's a lot of guys like that in this organization. We all kind of have the same personality, but we all kind of, you hang around certain people, the environment, you become the people you hang around, and we all have the same approach, to the media. So, guys are pretty good with, walking, softly, being humble and not, giving away too much of our game plan or whatever it is our mindset is, but, with inside the family, we all have, we know what's going on. We all have our different personalities, and some guys are, more social or talkative than others, but everybody has its own face when it comes to, being a Spur, and it starts with Pop.
And nobody can argue with the results by any means. I mean, clearly, especially this season, you guys proved that it worked. Does anybody mess with him? How does he keep it loose? I don't want you to reveal any secrets or anything, but how does he keep it loose with you guys?
Yeah, Pop's actually very laid back outside of, talking to you guys, and off the court, but obviously he's very intense when we're playing. He's very intense when he's, telling us what we need to do, but our practices are pretty laid back. Our film sessions are probably the most intense. But other than that, when he's talking to us, hanging out with us, he's very sarcastic, funny guy. He's cool to be around. So he keeps it very loose and shows us some funny clips. He does some funny things. And today he showed some emotion with us and had some fun. He was pretty happy, and it was good to see.
Nice. So he does. That's great to hear. I think we all love it, and he puts on such a great show with us. But clearly, we can tell that the relationship you guys have with each other and also with Greg Popovich, I mean, it speaks for itself. Danny Green is our guest, NBC Sports Radio. Do you run with anybody else but the Spurs on NBA 2K?
I don't play much, but when I do play, I don't go with anybody else. No.
You're okay with your ratings? We need to call them up and say that you need a boost?
We might need to change those a little bit, but I like to fly under the radar, so I don't need to be too good on the game, but they do need to change some things on there.
I'm putting you on the spot here, Danny, but give us one of your top Twitter followers.
My top Twitter followers?
I know Kendall gets a lot of love for you for his vines on there.
Yeah, he's funny, man. That guy's comedy. He's always got some funny vines, but I can't really say. I don't read too much on Twitter as much as everybody does on Instagram. I guess Instagram is the biggest thing now, but on Twitter, I follow some of my close friends, some people you probably wouldn't know, but Kendall's probably one of the funnier guys to see his vines happen, him and John Henson.
Okay, yeah, and Kendall transfers over. That's fine. That works too. Instagram now is where you go for the vines, so I get it. Danny, listen. I'm sorry.
Kyle Love's pretty funny on Instagram, too. Those guys are a bunch of clowns.
UNC guys. Love it, man. Thanks for the time so much. Congratulations. Enjoy the summer. I know you guys will be right back to work when the season starts, but you really earned it this year, and thanks for the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our thanks to Danny Green of the world champion San Antonio Spurs. For Kurt Heelan, Eitan Shander, it is the PBT podcast on ProBasketballTalk.NBCSports.com.